I don't know who I am, but I know what keeps me alive, keeps me out of jail, keeps me from hurting people. I do as I'm told. What's the point in any of it? It's all just gonna boil up and wash us away.
Hey, mister.
Yeah?
Me and my dad just got into town. I was wondering if you'd give us a job.
I pay a day's pay for a day's work. And if we work till dinner and get rained out, I pay for the whole day. Does that sound fair enough?
Yes, sir.
I'm Joe. When I watch that boy, I see someone who's nothing like me.
What the hell you looking at?
Why do you stick around like this?
What's most important right now is me taking care of Dorothy and Mama. We kind of got a family problem right now.
What happened?
He's all beat up.
I can't get my hands dirty in every little thing. You know how I get.
Why you want to go back to the damn penitentiary, man?
Freeze, Joe!
Bring your mom and your sister. You'll be safe here.
Person just don't know from one day to the next which one's gonna be their last.
Getting old, yeah. Who am I to tell you how to live your life?
Don't fool yourself too much about me.
If I find out something's happened to that boy, I'm gonna whip whoever's ass has something to do with it.
Thank you, sir.
You don't need to call me, sir. I'm your friend.
You think Joe's your daddy? I'm the one taking care of you.
Folks looking for trouble tend to find more than they're after.
If anything happens to me, you get out of the way, you hear?
I've been looking for you and that kid.
What have you done, Joe?
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me, as always, on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I am, dare I say, excited about this episode?
Yeah, this was a pretty big one back in the day, by which I mean like 5 years ago.
which in cage time is a long time.
In cage time, that's like 50 years.
Yeah.
Imagine being a film critic in 2013, Mike, and having to review all of Nicolas Cage's recent work. We don't have to imagine that because we've been living it, but still.
Mm-hmm.
Just take a look back at our last, say, 15 episodes of The Complete Works. There are a couple of high points, right? Like Bad Lieutenant, Kick-Ass, The Croods, of course.
Right.
But for the most part, it's been failed blockbusters, direct-to-video thrillers, and tepid box office flops. Likewise, imagine being a film critic in 2013 who had to review the films directed by David Gordon Green. And this was a promising director in the early 2000s with indie dramas like George Washington, who spent the back half of the 2000s making stoner comedies that started off good, like Pineapple Express, but got worse and worse over time, like Your Highness.
Oof.
Yeah, that was a rough one. Now, imagine being at the Venice Film Festival in 2013 to see the world premiere of the new David Gordon Green movie in which he got Nicolas Cage to star. What would you expect from the two of them, Mike?
I have no idea. That sounds like a terrifying proposition to like go into that completely blind.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it was you expected, it might not have been an intimate drama featuring Cage's best performance in years.
No, definitely not.
But that's what they got, and and people were kind of stunned by it. The movie was called Joe, and it ended up being widely acclaimed and seen as a return to form for both Nicolas Cage and David Gordon Green. Now, that did not help the movie at the box office, but it did bring a little bit of critical respect back for Cage. And even though there would be plenty more of those lousy thrillers in the future, it let people know that he still got it and that the Cage-assance could happen at any single time.
From that moment forward, it was there.
From that moment forward, we were just counting down to Mandy, Mike.
That's
pretty
right.
Much it. Now, Nicolas Cage stars in Joe as Joe. He stars as Joe Ransom, to be exact, who serves as a mentor slash father figure to a young kid named Gary Jones. And he's played in the movie by Ty Sheridan, who had a really amazing run as a child actor with movies like The Tree of Life and Mud, before moving on to more recent blockbusters like X-Men Apocalypse, where he played Cyclops, and the lead role in Ready Player One. Joe's girlfriend Lacey is played by Heather Kafka, who horror fans might recognize for her role in the 2003 remake of The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And character actor Ronnie Blevins plays Willie, a guy who Joe has a long-standing feud with that picks fights with him throughout the movie. Now, Blevins is a guy who has showed up in very small roles in a lot of different stuff. You probably wouldn't recognize him for any one of them, but you may, like, you may remember his face from movies like The Dark Knight Rises, Seven Psychopaths, or episodes of Justified, True Detective, and Twin Peaks.
He's the generic brand Alexander Skarsgård.
You're saying that Alexander Skarsgård is not the generic brand Alexander Skarsgård?
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, the difference is that Alexander Skarsgård has had leading roles. Like people kind of know who he is.
That's true.
You know, this guy, he's a working actor. He's been in a lot of different things. It's just one of those things where it's like, it's always small roles. Like people wouldn't like know him by name or even by face, really. But he's always just there. Now, one thing David Gordon Green occasionally does in his movies is cast the supporting roles with locals from the town that he's filming in. And he does just that with Joe. Most of the roles in this movie are actual townsfolk from Austin, Texas. And I want to single out just one, Gary Poulter, who plays Ty Sheridan's drunk, abusive father in the film, Wade. Now, Poulter, in real life, was a homeless man suffering from alcoholism living on the streets in Austin, Texas, when David Gordon Green found him and cast him in this movie.
Wow.
Yeah. And the guy's story is fascinating. I mean, he was dishonorably discharged from the Navy after going AWOL in Japan for a year and a half. He worked as a street performer for a long time, and before being cast in the film, was left naked on the side of the road after stealing money from a traveling carnival that he worked at.
What?
Yeah. It's an insane life story. That's all on his Wikipedia page. I bring this up because Gary Poulter actually died shortly after filming happened, like 2 months later, before the film actually saw a release, and the film is dedicated to him in the closing credits. Joe is his only screen role, though he did appear as an extra in an episode of the 80s TV show 30-something, but this is the only like actual role that he had. Many critics praised his role in the movie as a highlight of the film, and Peter Subzinski from RogerEbert.com called it one of the great one-shot performances in the history of cinema. And it's pretty wild to think about, like he wasn't acting for a lot of this movie. He was just himself. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts. The whole time, I was wondering, like, there's a very particular, way of speaking that type of person has. And I was like, how does an actor, get that, how did that guy get that voice? How did he do that? So it turns out it was real.
Yeah, it's all real there. Now, Joe is written by Gary Hawkins and based on a novel by Larry Brown. Hawkins has actually directed a documentary about Larry Brown in 2002. So his relationship to Brown's work went back a pretty long way. And the film was written and directed by David Gordon Green, released just a few months after the well-received Prince Avalanche with Paul Rudd and Emile Hirsch, and 1 year before his next film, a drama called Manglehorn with Al Pacino, which got pretty mixed reviews. Most recently, he and Danny McBride teamed up to make the new Halloween movie in 2018, which turned out to be a big critical and financial success, and which we talked about on a recent episode of Film Bookcast. You can go back and listen to that if you are so inclined. Incidentally, Danny McBride is also credited as an executive producer on Joe. I don't know if you noticed that, Mike.
I don't think I noticed, no.
Yeah, no, he and McBride go back a long ways, pretty much since Pineapple Express, but Gordon Green also directed and produced a lot of episodes of Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals on HBO. Oh. Now, Joe did not do too well at the box office. Hell, even I didn't see it, because I was a poor college kid at the time, and it just didn't play anywhere near me. I remember wanting to see it, because I was a huge Nicolas Cage fan, and it was getting good reviews. But, you know, it's one of those things where, I've said this before, where if a pretty well-reviewed drama is not playing anywhere near me in theaters, there's a very small chance that I'm going to go out to see it.
Right.
It's even when it hits home video or whatever, I'm like, but it's, you know, it's a drama. It's one of those things where I have to, will myself to go out to a theater to go see it. And unfortunately, Joe just didn't happen for me. It didn't play anywhere near me. So this is my first time seeing Joe. And I think it's yours too, right, Mike?
Yeah, I think it's the same boat. Like, I remember hearing about this movie when it was out, But we went to college in the same place, so if it wasn't near you, it wasn't near me.
Exactly. Now, on a budget of $4 million, the movie pulled in about $2.3 million. It got a limited release in the U.S. On April 11th, 2014. And if you weren't seeing it, you might have seen Draft Day, which is a surprisingly solid drama with Kevin Costner that kind of acts like Moneyball, but for football. Yeah, remember that movie? It was pretty good.
How about that?
Yeah. You could have seen the animated sequel, Rio 2. You could have seen Jim Jarmusch's take on vampires with Tom Hiddleston and Tilda Swinton, Only Lovers Left Alive. Or you could have seen one of the early films of a modern horror master, Oculus, which was directed by Mike Flanagan. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Mike Flanagan. I've said many times that I'm a fan of Mike Flanagan on our other show, Film Bookcast. I've also said many times that I was very drunk when I watched Oculus.
So there's that.
And I remember nothing about that movie. One day, I'm going to go back to it because I do like Mike Flanagan quite a bit. I still got to watch The Haunting on Hill House, too, which he directed every episode of. Anyway, the IMDb plot synopsis for Joe reads, an ex-con, who is the unlikeliest of role models, meets a 15-year-old boy and is faced with the choice of redemption or ruin. So, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on Joe? What did you think going into this movie you were about to receive?
Going into it, I didn't really know anything. I knew it was, you know, a drama starring Nick Cage that was supposed to be really good. So, like, that's kind of all I knew. And what we get is this, you know, slice of life, Southern family drama. And it's fucking incredible, dude. Like, I was not ready for how moving and emotional this movie was going to make me. Like, it was so intense. And it sort of reminds me, I feel like maybe in that this time period that when this came out, there was sort of like this upswing in like Southern gothic drama kind of stuff. Like, I feel like this feels very akin to Killer Joe with Matthew McConaughey. I haven't seen Mud, but I get the same kind of feeling from what I've heard about it.
Yes.
Blue Ruin, this reminded me of a lot. So there was this kind of like upswing in that genre, and it was pretty cool, I guess, that happened. I don't know. It's kind of weird how those things tend to happen like that. But Joe was incredible. I feel like Cage, I think I tweeted about it, that the Cage essence is so obvious after you've watched Joe. Like, it's so clear that that resurgence was going to come eventually.
Right.
It made me feel so sad for him, like, for Cage as a human, that I think if whatever, like, happened to him that put him in, like, that financial ruin where he had to start taking just every movie because he needed money to pay back or whatever the hell happened.
Yeah.
Like the soul, like his castles or whatever the fuck. I feel like there's a lot of like internet like folklore around whatever happened to Cage,
right?
In that era. But anyway, that if that hadn't happened and he was able to pick and choose the dramatic roles that he wanted, that he would still be the leading man, like huge stay he was in like late 90s Hollywood. I feel like he would have stuck around and would have still been a like prestige actor.
Yeah, I am 100% with you there, man. I think Joe is a very good movie. And it's nice to have that at this point in the complete works.
Maybe I feel relief.
Because it has been a little while. I mean, we did have the Croods a few episodes ago, so there is that. Lest we forget the Croods. But Joe is very good. I really love the way this movie kind of essentially switches perspectives as it goes on. Because it starts out as a movie that's really more about the kid, Gary, and then it kind of becomes a movie about Joe towards the end. And the relationship's at the center of it, so it's really about both of them. But the way it transitions into a Joe movie is pretty fascinating. And Cage is just great in this movie. He grounds the whole thing. That's one of the things where it's like when the movie first started, to me, like Joe was like the least interesting character in the movie. And so by the time it kind of focuses on him, he becomes the most interesting. And I think that development is pretty cool. I also think David Gordon Green has had one of the most fascinating careers out of like any director working today. if you look at the movies he's directed, they are all over the place in terms of like tone and genre and everything. And he's shown skill in just about everything he's done. I mean, he can do very small scale, intimate drama. He can do broad comedy. He made Pineapple Express, man. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And now he just went into horror with Halloween. He might be doing Halloween 2. We'll see what happens. But I think if I know David Gordon Green, he'll probably do something else before he goes back into Halloween if he doesn't end up going back. But he seems like just as comfortable working with untrained extras as he does with big name actors. There are usually at this point pretty big names in his films, but with something like Joe, there's Nicolas Cage and there's Ty Sheridan and there are the two other actors in the movie, right? The Heather Kafka and Ronnie Willans. Otherwise, it's all townspeople, people who lived around that Texas area they were filming in, and I think that's pretty incredible. He's able to get like naturalistic performances out of those people, in addition to also having to deal with like actual actors and making them feel like they are compatible in a world together. Like, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that, like those interactions, that guy that runs that like convenience store or whatever that Cage goes to a lot.
Yeah.
Or the work crew that he has. It doesn't feel like Cage, Joe has the spotlight or anything like that, even though he's the main character. It just feels like a bunch of guys working in the field that they work in. And we're there for like extended periods of time and with the like hanging out with those characters or spending time with those relationships. So it is really impressive both ways, I feel, like for Gordon Green to get performances like that out of these regular folks and for Cage to not be like acting around them, you know what I mean? Like, did acting circles around them or anything weird? It all feels very natural.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I think, and what I like about Joe, it does kind of evoke the spirit of some of David Gordon Green's earlier films, like George Washington, but it shows a filmmaker who has grown in that time, too, because it's been, like, at this point, 13 years have passed since that first movie and this one, and I think that it's remarkable he's able to kind of go back, do something similar, but in a different kind of way, and I think that is pretty cool. Now, at this point in the podcast, I usually ask, what did you think of Nicolas Cage in the movie, but it seems like we've already kind of covered that, but we'll talk about Cage a little bit more. As advertised, Cage is very good in Joe. I think he's given a really great performance in this movie. I think when the movie came out, a lot of people were like, this is the best Cage performance ever, and I'm not sure if I would go that far, but I think at this stage in his career, it might be like his most important one, because like you said, this is like, once you watch this, you're like, oh yeah, the Cage Renaissance will come. It will come.
Yes, just like Kevin Costner said in Field of Dreams.
In Field of Cage.
In the Field of Cage. If you film it, they will come. But anyway, yeah, it just feels so vital for Cage to get this one right after this string of, seeking justices. We have the Croods. That's neat.
Yeah.
But that's a very different kind of thing.
Yeah.
But for him to come back, and it's so, this Joe is so different from those roles, right? It's not a big thriller action, running down the streets kind of thing.
Yes.
It's just we're here in this small town, like, dealing with life and the conflicts that come from that. So it feels very much like an actor with something to prove, like just like in acting chops kind of way, not like big money craziness. So it just made me warm my heart that it worked.
Yeah, definitely. It is the movie that reminded people that Nicolas Cage is not just a meme,
He's
an actor, and he's a damn good one. Anyway, this movie also kind of lives and dies by his relationship with Ty Sheridan, and I think the two of them are great together in this movie. Especially in the second half, I think, when they sort of, like, bond, like, in that second half. Like, that sequence where it's, him and Ty Sheridan, like, looking for Cage's dog. And it's like, driving around, they're drinking, they're palling around. Like, that whole sequence I thought was great. And that, like, kind of cemented their relationship for me for the entire movie, really.
Yeah, that scene is very important. And it does give, Cage a little bit of the freedom to be goofy. Because it's, they're drunk or he's drunk. Well, now they're both drunk. Driving around looking for his lost dog and stuff. So, like, you get some of that, like, weird laughing and yelling a little bit kind of goofiness.
Right.
So that was a lot of fun. Like, as just a Cage fan, but
it
makes sense in ways that other Cage moments don't in the rest of his filmography, like within the context of the movie, I feel.
Right. Yeah, no, I get that. We've said that a lot, where there are a lot of Cage roles where, like, he'll add his own goofiness, and it doesn't really fit the movie, but, like, we like it anyway because it's Cage goofiness. Every once in a while, you'll have a movie with the mannerisms and the tics that, like, they'll have a character that makes sense for the choices that Cage makes in a certain way. You know what I mean? Like something like Matchstick Men,
right,
where Cage is, gets the opportunity to mess around, like go a little nuts with his line readings because his character is a little off kilter and that kind of thing. So Joe has a couple scenes like that where Cage isn't going nuts. Like, he's not like,
no.
You know, as far as like crazy Cage goes, this is like a 2 on the Cage scale.
Yeah.
This is a mostly like pretty grounded performance. So there's occasional like Cage screaming, but it's all like dramatic screaming, you know. It's
not It's not Vampire's Kiss.
It's not Vampire's Kiss, exactly. Now, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Cage play in other movies, Mike?
I'm not sure I have an answer to this quite exactly. I feel like this, especially in this era of the podcast and his career, this is so different from everything else. You know, it evokes some stuff that will come later, I think. And I don't think that's fair yet to use that.
You know, I think I know what you're talking about because I also had that written down. So I think... we're going to mention that. We don't usually talk about movies we haven't covered yet in the podcast.
Yeah.
But I think the first time you see Cage in the movie, it really reminded me of the first time you see him in Mandy. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yes. I think the character of Joe wakes up as the character in Mandy.
It's quite possible.
His name,
yeah.
I can't remember. Red? Is his name
Red? Red is his character in Mandy. And yeah, the movies, like both movies start off with Cage, you know, in a truck doing lumber work with like a crew of people. And like, it's like almost exactly the same. And I'm like, huh, this is weird.
Yeah, it's kind of odd.
Yeah.
To answer some other parts about that, I feel like it, you know, sort of evokes the Creeds because that's the first... And I'm saying that only because it's the first role where we both specifically mentioned it's Cage as a father figure in that... Like, in that role, not just a character that happens to be a father.
Right.
And that's the whole plot of Joe, is Gary's father is absent or abusive and destructive, and Gary finds that kind of, you know, male role model in Joe. And that's the whole plot of the movie.
Yeah, definitely. And I think in our Croods review, that's the first time we noticed that Cage was like, there was a pattern of Cage being a mentor slash father figure. But the Croods, Stolen, Ghost Rider 2, Sorcerer's Apprentice, Kick-Ass, all these movies have Cage kind of acting as... Not necessarily a good influence on the kids, and I don't think he's a good influence in Joe either, honestly. But or at least in a lot of different in some ways he is, but in other ways definitely not. But you know, he acts as like a mentor slash father figure to these, you know, kids in these movies, and that has become a bigger theme in the Cage movies of the 2010s, which I think is pretty interesting. I think it's partially it's probably just because of the age Nicolas Cage is at this time. You know, these are the roles that are available to him, but there are other roles that he could be taking, and so I think it's interesting that he's being drawn to these roles specifically.
Yeah, I feel like this one in Joe is the most poignant. It's hard to compare that kind of thing to like what his role is in
like Stolen or something.
Stolen, yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. Yeah, I don't know. It's good. What do you think, Mike? What else you got?
Yeah, I agree with all that. It has been a long time since Cage has starred in a more conventional drama movie. Because, like you said, it's mostly thrillers, like action stuff, running through the streets. You're seeking justices and what have you. I think you have to go all the way back to Captain Corelli's Mandolin if you want to get the last like straight drama from Cage. Like, I mean, maybe like Lord of War would count. But that's more of like the Martin Scorsese light with the, you know, the editing and the, you know, like all that stuff. I feel like as far as a conventional drama sense goes, I feel like Captain Crowley's Mandolin might've been the last one. And
that was like 40 movies ago.
Yeah, that was 2001. And this is 2014. So that's a 13-year gap, which is pretty wild. And I also just wanted to bring this up real quick. You know, Cage also starred in another movie where he plays a guy named Joe who dies in the end to save a young kid that he's been mentoring throughout the entire film. But enough about Bangkok Dangerous, Mike.
Oh, my God. wow.
Yeah, there it is. Joe and Bangkok Dangerous are the same movie. You heard it here first. On
double feature.
On The Complete Works. Maybe not. I mean, Bangkok Dangerous is pretty bad, but...
Yeah.
Throughout the course of your career, it seems like you've done this combination of these big sort of event and action films, and then these films that are more character-focused.
Yeah.
How are you making those choices now? What's sort of the balance you want to strike? Do you want to do more of this kind of work?
I want to do both. I always approach every performance with the same amount of
work ethic. I want them to succeed in terms of emotional value. Even though a movie's an action movie or a science fiction movie, I still want it to have something about it that connects with you on an emotional level. The problem is that labels get in the way, and people don't take movies seriously if it has a label, even if there is genuine emotion there. I had experimented with bigger styles, more operatic styles, more surrealistic styles of pop art acting, if you will, and it was time for me to not put things on, but take things off and be more naked in performance. And when I say naked, I mean perhaps more quiet, more truthful, and take my emotions from the, or the wisdom from the mistakes I've made in my past, and put them into a performance. You know, take the negative and turn it into a positive. And that's what I wanted to do with Joe. It's a long-winded way of saying I'm still going to do both, but right now my mandate is more of that quiet kind of approach to performance.
What are the moments or scenes in Joe that stood out to you, Mike, while you were watching it?
Kind of like all of it. I feel like there isn't really one moment that doesn't meet like my criteria for that. If that makes sense, like
okay,
I was pretty much captivated the entire movie, which is like crazy for this podcast.
It's been a while since that has happened, I believe. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
The crew's I guess notwithstanding.
No, well, obviously that's a perfect movie. We all know that. But yeah, I feel like there's. Some of the moments between Joe and, was it Willie? You said was that, like that townie guy that they hate?
Yes, Willie's the guy who kind of keeps picking fights with Joe throughout the movie.
Yeah, particularly the bar scene where Willie confronts him in the bar. Just because it's the most restrained I feel like I've ever seen Cage, right? Mm. He is not reacting the whole time until like this explosion.
Yes.
Where he smashes the bottle and like all that stuff. And I don't know, that was just such an interesting confrontation, and Willie's just the fucking weirdest character, man.
Yeah, I mean, Willie is a really interesting character to watch. When he first shows up and shoots Cage from the car, I was yeah. like, holy shit! Because that completely caught me off guard, completely unexpected, because I didn't even know this movie would have, like, guns in it. I thought it would just be, like, a slice-of-life little drama, and it ended up being a little bit more than that. But, yeah, Willie first shows up, and immediately, like, you know, he's in the distance, he's in a car, pulls out a shotgun, shoots Cage, and drives off. And it's like, holy shit, is the movie over 20 minutes in? Like,
what the fuck happened?
What's happening here? And then Willie kind of is just, like, the thorn in Nicolas Cage's side throughout the movie. And somebody even asked, I think his girlfriend asks him, like, what even is the issue with you and Willie? And it's like, I slapped him in the bar or whatever. And it's like, why'd you do that? It's like, I don't remember. And, like, it's just been a longstanding feud between them for years, apparently.
Yeah. I do really love how much this movie sort of, like, controls information, particularly about Joe. We never really know anything about him. We find out he's done time in the penitentiary and
right.
stuff. I guess we do find out why eventually. But yeah, there's just this just kind of like specter of guilt and like anger behind Joe, that we never really address until the very the very end. And I just really liked that a lot. And now I realize why when I said Alexander Skarsgård before, you looked at me like that. It's because I meant Peter Sarsgaard. That's a very different person. And I definitely didn't look it up before. Well, after I was like, he didn't laugh. What is that? It's because it's Peter Sarsgaard. I wanted everyone to know
okay.
that I knew what I meant, and I just said it wrong. So anyway.
That's pretty great. Actually, completely unrelated. Somebody on the morning show this morning, we were talking about Who Framed Roger Rabbit for whatever reason, and my co-host said something along the lines of like, oh yeah, Anthony Hopkins is great in that movie. And I was like, wait, who? What?
The British guy, you know.
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins. And he meant Bob Hoskins.
Yep.
But like, I really want to see Who Framed Roger Rabbit with Anthony Hopkins now. Like, that sounds amazing.
That's incredible.
Anyway, completely unrelated to what we're talking about right now. I do want to go back to some of the stuff in this movie. I think the voiceover montage about halfway through is probably the standout scene for me. There's a scene right after Gary shows up at Cage's house for the first time. You know, Cage is like talking to his girlfriend about Gary and about what he sees in the kid. And it's just like, you know, that's played over a montage of like the kid at work and the kid like around town and stuff. And it's really powerful and effective. And it really gets to the heart of who Joe is as a character. And I think that's, to me, that was the standout scene of the movie.
You look at me like I can make a move. What are you thinking when you look at me like that? Don't you care? I don't know who I am. But I know what keeps me alive is restraint. Keeps me out of jail. Keeps me from hurting people. Mark of some fucked up faith that there's a reason.
Thank you.
A reason for all of this. The reason in most moments I shouldn't do what I want to do. Do as I'm told. These men who bust their asses work like dogs. And I believe in them, but every day they hurt. Get old, they peel back. There's no frontier anymore.
Alan! Clark!
Gary. And I watch that boy. I see someone who's nothing like me, but he's a child, folks left behind. He's on a fence. Balanced right there.
What do you want? What is it you want?
Nothing.
Just tell me what I can do.
I like you too, but what's the point in any of it?
Wait, 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 wait.
Fuck to this day. I mean, fuck to this day. So I'm just gonna boil up and wash us away. You'll still be here. Maybe you won't.
Yeah, yeah, that is really powerful. There's so much about Gary that is just like, what is just good kid? Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's just going through the roughest, most horrific thing people can go through. And it's just like, yeah. I just gotta tough it out. Like, that's just what it is.
Right, yeah. And he's, like, super polite to everybody, and he's super nice, and, you know, all that.
He works hard and all that. It's great.
Yeah, I love the, when Gary first shows up on Cage's campsite early in the movie, and he, you know, asks Cage to give him work, and Cage does, and there's, like, a montage of him working with Cage's crew, right? And you see, like, him, and he's doing all the work. He's, like, you know, excited to be a part of it. And then, later on, Gary comes back with his dad, and his dad's, you see the montage of his dad doing the work, and it's the complete opposite. Like, I love the juxtaposition between those two montages and basically who Gary and his dad are as people.
Yeah, that was just so, like, frustrating. I can't believe how much this movie made me feel.
Yeah.
And that's not what I come to movies for. No, I'm kidding.
I hate feeling emotions in the art that I experience.
Yes, how dare you evoke emotions? But yeah, that scene was great. I loved Cage's crew. I can't remember the guy. Sammy? No, Sammy's the one that never shows up. The guy that's, like, sort of in charge.
Yeah, I'm blanking on his name, too. But I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, just all those relationships were so great. And knowing that those were just, like, townspeople makes it even better, I think. Like, it's incredible that those guys were able to do that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty awesome. Like, it feels like they probably were just a crew that they picked up on the side of the road. Like, hey, you want to be in a movie?
Yeah. Just do the same thing you're doing, but...
But we're going to film you, and Nicolas Cage is here.
It's casual.
I also... I mean, you know, speaking of Gary's dad, Wade, I mean, Gary Poulter is a guy who plays Wade, obviously the guy who I mentioned before who passed away 2 months after filming happened. And I would imagine he was a difficult guy to work with because he was drunk all the time. Like, he was, you know, genuinely drunk and disturbed and, like, all the time. But the scene, like, every scene he's in is, like, really powerful and, like, really, yeah. like, really intense. I think the scene where Nicolas Cage threatens Wade in the car is a standout scene as well.
Are you paying my boy?
Oh, yeah. I actually ain't got paid none.
Probably saves it because he's smart. Buying this GMC off of me.
Doing what?
Nothing.
Yeah. He ain't so smart. He don't know nothing. Yeah, neither do you.
I'm gonna shoot you straight.
That boy works his ass off! He's earning money, and it's his. This truck's a piece of shit. You need to get out.
If I find out something's happening to that boy, I'm gonna whip whoever's ass has something to do with it. Now get the hell away from me before I knock what's left of your fucking teeth out.
Yeah, yes, yes. That scene is wild. And that's one of those, like, momentary Cage moments. Where he, like, throws, like, water on his face or something, and then, like, on his own face, and then, like, pins right. the guy against the door. But, yeah, that was very intense. The scene where Wade kills the other guy just for the bottle of wine. That
oh,
shit was
yeah.
insane.
Insane, man. there's a lot of, like, very sudden violence in this movie that, like, you don't see coming. I think eventually you see it come, like, you realize what, like, this movie is doing that quite a bit. And then you eventually start to see that coming. But, like, when I first started the movie, like, I genuinely thought this was just going to be, like, a little slice of life drama with Cage and, like, this young kid. Didn't think there would be anybody dying in this movie. Turns out a lot of people died in the movie.
Yeah. It's a lot like Blue Ruin in that way.
It is a little, there's a little bit of shades of Blue Ruin, which this, Blue Ruin came out in 2013, I think. So, like, it's like just before this one did, I think.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. That said, you know, it sounds like a very intense and very dark movie. There are, like, a couple of, like, you know, like, lighthearted, like, moments throughout the movie, I think. A couple of, like, small jokey moments. Specifically, like we mentioned before, that sequence where Cage and Gary are looking for Cage's dog. They're driving around. They're drinking while they're driving. Which, you know, don't do that at home. But it was endearing in the scene. And, you know, there's, like, you know, Cage is bonding with him, and he's talking about, like, his lucky lighter, and he gives the kid the lighter at the end, and he's like, you're going to get laid so much with that lighter, kid. And then I really loved, like, the beat at the end of that scene where, you know, the kid's like, oh, thanks, man, and he takes away the lighter, and it goes away, and Cage, like, pulls out a cigarette and, like, tries to light it and then realizes that he doesn't have his lighter on him because he just gave it away.
I did appreciate... Oh, man, I forgot where I was going to go with that. But, well, what I'm really thinking about is that scene, again, with Wade killing the guy for the bottle of wine, where it's, like, you get shades of, like, Halloween. Like, you see where that's going to cut, like, that testing those horror movie devices in films. You know, because the guy walks past Wade, and then we cut to following that guy, and then we just see Wade in the background for a second, and then we're cutting back and forth between them and stuff, so, like, building tension. So I just wanted to, that, like, stuck out for Gordon Green, like, oh, look, he's got, you know, dipping his toes into horror movie tropes and stuff, here.
Yeah, definitely. We should talk about Cage's backstory in the movie a little bit. He does have a monologue in, like, the middle of the movie where he tells Gary that, like, he spent, like, 29 months, in the state penitentiary or something like that. There's a point where he ends up, like, overnight in jail. And he seems like he's pretty friendly with the head cop there or whatever. And that guy ends up coming back to Cage's house later in the movie too. And then there's a scene towards the end of the movie where Cage gets pulled over and he grabs the officer who is pulling him over and threatens him. And that's like, I don't know. At that point, I was like, man, Joe is like Joe's an asshole.
Yeah. The first time it happens. Because, like, he gets pulled over, or he's getting pulled over, and he just, like, floors it. And, like, leads them on a chase, and then gets out and tries to fight them and stuff. And that's when he ends up in jail overnight.
Right.
And I was like, what the... Like, that comes out of nowhere. Like, why would you do this, dude? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then we get the backstory that, like, the cops fuck with him all the time and all this stuff. And I don't know. It's real, like, down home or, like, you know, small town troubles kind of stuff.
Yeah, like everybody knows you and everybody knows you're like an abusive alcoholic, so everybody's going to give you a hard time for that kind of thing. And so he will get arrested for all kinds of reasons. The cops will pull him over for no reason because they think he might be doing something. And he's getting so frustrated with it. And then, yeah, eventually he snaps, and there's that point at the end where he grabs the officer and like tosses his gun away and drives off. But then the other officer comes to his house and being like, man, you can't do that. Like, stop.
Yeah. His one friend.
Yeah. And yeah, there are a few scenes like that. There's also Cage and his relationship with the whorehouse, which I thought was an interesting part of his life as well. And there's the dog at the whorehouse, which is... Cage's dog killed the other dog.
Yeah, and
I was like, whoa. Like, that to me came out of nowhere. At least a little bit. But I do like when Cage is shouting, when the dog is barking and Cage is shouting, that dog is an asshole! And he's like shouting it at the dog. It's great.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny. It's one of those things, you know, I don't really typically watch trailers, but for some reason I watched the trailer for this before I watched it.
Oh yeah?
And it's sort of edited to me, like I knew it was like a drama, but the trailer makes it look like it's one of those like us versus them small town shootout kind of movies. Like it's so weird, like one of those kind of things. So there's that one shot where when Cage goes to the brothel and he kicks the door down and throws his dog, like lets his dog run in.
Yeah.
And in the trailer it's used to make it look like he's like kicking in a door to like a room full of enemies and like letting his dog run. Yeah, like it's so weird. It like so when it happened in the movie, I was like, "What the fuck?" It's not what.
Yeah,
but yeah. Anyway, that was just like a one because that one shot is really cool. Like Cage kicking in the door and letting his dog run, but it's just to attack another dog so he can get a blowjob. That's really sad. I don't know.
Yeah, it was very. It was a very surreal sequence, I think. But
yeah.
So we should talk about the ending of the movie a bit. So. Towards the end of the movie, Gary's father, Wade, ends up kidnapping his sister, who is mute, by the way. That's an added detail that the movie kind of throws in there. But yeah, he kidnaps his sister, and Gary goes to Cage for help, and Cage is like, yes, I will help you. And, you know, they drive out into a remote location. Willie is there, and Cage and Willie get into like a standoff. And ends up shooting Willie, but Willie's friend shoots Cage, and Cage shoots the friend. It becomes like Cage also gets shot in the process. And then Wade sees Cage and jumps off the bridge, and everybody involved dies. And it's intense, and it's intense, and it's sad, and it's very like it's a very emotional ending, especially like towards the end when like at the very end when Gary and his sister kind of show up again. And Cage's cop friend also shows up at the scene, and he has like the most heartbreaking line reading from an actor, where he says like, "What have you done, Joe?" And like,
yeah,
and it's so, like there's so much pain in that voice, and I was like, "Holy!" Like I was feeling the emotions up at that point, but then I was like, "Holy shit!" Like,
that was
a lot.
And that moment right then, where Gary hugs. Joe, like, as he's bleeding out, and I thought it was gonna, like, I was expecting the typical, like, you know, we're gonna have an exchange, and they're gonna, like, embrace, and it's gonna be, like, a really long, drawn-out thing, but Gary, like, hugs Joe, and, like, for, like, you know, a couple of seconds, and he sits up, and Joe's already dead, which I was, like, even more, like, that much more of a punch.
Yeah.
And then, that final scene, like, I loved that, the very final scene where it's the guy that owns the farm talking to Gary.
Yes.
And it's a mirror of the first shot of Gary talking to his dad.
Yep.
And it just ends on such a, like, hopeful note, right? That first shot, it's Gary telling his dad, like, you're going to get your ass beat because of what you did by these guys, and, you know, you never listen and all this shit, and then he gets his ass whooped. This final scene, they go to work. Like, what Gary's been doing. He's going to get there and take care of the people that he needs to take care of.
Yeah, definitely. And I love that the job that he got, that the guy who owns the farm, it's replanting the same forest that he spent all movie killing with Joe and his crew.
Yeah.
I thought that was a pretty nice touch, too.
What an on-the-nose metaphor. Yeah. But it left such a good way, though. I loved it.
Yeah, so no, good. It was great. And then the cut to credits. I think there's an art in choosing end credits songs for movies and TV shows. And I think the song that ends this movie, which is called For Anyone's Sake by Ryan Bingham, it's a great song for the end of this movie. It's a great capper on the film. Like it ends the film on like a very melancholy note, but I think a very, like, it just fits the film very well.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of movies where They don't put that much thought into that at all, but I love when a movie does have something like that going for it, you know?
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of whatever the theme song from The Leftovers was in seasons 2 and 3.
Let the Mystery Be by Irish DeMent.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, like, not, it doesn't sound anything like that, but it just felt, it felt so, it felt as appropriate as that song did for The Leftovers.
Yeah.
If that's kind of like my gauge for, like, how good a song is merged with its work, you know,
Is this a Leftovers level song or not? That's
yeah.
That's
is the bar. This Where Is My Mind on the Piano, or or is it some weird like saloon cover from Westworld?
Is this an episode of Leftovers cast?
Yeah, wait a second.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts on Joe before we move on to Netflix Letterboxd reviews, Mike? Or should we wrap this up?
Yeah, there's one more thing I did want to point out. And that is, this also reminds me a lot of Place Beyond the Pines, which is another one of these, like, family dramas that came out at the same time.
That was 2013, yeah. Or yeah. 2013, 2014, it was around that same era.
In there. And that is just one thing that, like, I didn't notice, and this is why, you know, like, female voices are important, or lady, you know, whatever. Because I went to see that with a friend at St. Rose, I think, actually, at one of the colleges near us, yes. Where, like, the writer was there. That you went to.
The college that I went to, yes.
Yeah. A producer or something was there, and I went there with some friends, and a couple of them were girls. And afterwards, they noticed, like, or pointed out to me and my other friend, which was me and another guy, that it's just, like, a completely masculine story. And, like, it was a good movie. They could recognize it, but there was nothing for them to, like, latch onto, you know?
Yeah.
It's just about the men in this story.
Yeah.
And I noticed that with Joe, too. Like, literally, Gary's sister is mute, and she's, like, being raped at the end, and, like, it's not really right. important what's happening to her. And I don't mean that as a critique. Like, it doesn't really take away from the movie, at least, from a male point of view. But it is just something that I've become aware of a lot, where, like, huh, this story is specifically about, like, you know, the sins of the father, and, like, all, you know, how that passes on from men to men and all this stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up. That's just a weird... And it's another one of those movies that came out at the same time that's sort of about the same thing, and one of those cinema trends going on then.
Yeah, definitely. Honestly, I feel like a lot of those Southern Gothic movies could probably fall into that same category. I think Blue Ruin would probably do that, too.
Yep.
I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it, so maybe there is like a female character that I'm forgetting. But I feel like Blue Ruin would be in that. And what was Mud, I think you also said, was one of them? Which Killer Joe, yeah, which... I mean,
It's the same thing.
I mean, it's been a while since I've seen all those movies. I saw all of those, actually, but it's been forever since I've seen them. But off the top of my head, it's tough to name a one of the main female characters in the movie. I feel like Killer Joe might have had like one or two. I'm blanking on who it was, but like,
yeah.
I also feel like Mud might have had one, but I don't know. It's all in the past. Who knows? We're not doing a Mud cast. We're doing a Cage cast.
Yeah, it's just something that I wanted to bring up. You know, something for people to think about.
Yeah, definitely. No, definitely a good thing to bring up. All right, Mike, let's wrap things up for our discussion on Joe, and let's move on into some Letterboxd and Netflix reviews that I found online. Here's a 4.5-star review of Joe on Letterboxd, which reads: in which a self-loathing, self-destructive alcoholic endeavors to protect a young boy from an abusive, destructive alcoholic. I'm convinced that there are actually two twin brothers, both named Nicolas Cage. The first one, let's call him Nick One, appears in films like Leaving Las Vegas, Adaptation, and Joe. His brother, Nick Two, appears in stuff like Vampire's Kiss, Wild at Heart, and Deadfall. Sometimes they appear in the same film, such as Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, in which they take turns filming different scenes. although each version of Nick has its own pros and cons, they are both entertaining to watch. More Nick Cage, please.
Wow. This is the most astute, groundbreaking observation about Nicolas Cage of all time.
We can shut this podcast down right now.
Yeah, get that person.
Here's a 4-star review of Joe, which reads: from the man who brought you Pineapple Express and The Sitter comes a film featuring a beatdown so brutal it makes the curb stomp scene in American History X look like it belongs in Muppets Take Manhattan.
Holy shit. That scene with Wade is incredibly brutal.
Oh, yeah. It's intense. Very intense. Here's a 1-star review from Netflix, actually. And it's the return of our old friend. This movie is not worth your viewing time. Definitely not a family movie.
Oh, no.
I was expecting Joe to be a positive father figure, but he turns out to be a terrible influence on an already troubled young boy. I did not like the language throughout the movie. There is no entertainment or educational value during the whole movie. It's our old pal, Temperance Virgin Ears, back again.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show, Temperance Virgin Ears. Speaking of, here's a 2-star review of Joe, which is also from Netflix. Vulgar, nasty, unpleasant. There are bad people in this world. There are violent people and cruel people. They all show up in this movie. If you find alcoholics, prostitutes, child beaters, animal cruelty, and corruption entertaining, then this is the movie for you, I guess. No doubt by the end of it, we will find that the central figure has a heart of gold and is willing to help the hapless boy he employs. Frankly, I couldn't get that far. If they had gotten that far, they would realize that that is not what happens in the movie. Yeah. Yes, the acting is decent. For me, that didn't balance out the basically repellent story that was told. Here's a 3.5-star review from Letterboxd, which reads, "That dog is an asshole." Yes, that's right. Nicolas Cage straight up calls a dog an asshole. No, he doesn't just call it that. He screams it to its face, and it's beautiful.
Only 3 stars?
3.5. Mike, 3.5.
Okay, all right.
And finally, I got one more 3.5-star review from Letterboxd. This is my favorite. It's only one line long. It goes, "Hey, Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand?"
You know, I think I thought that at one point. But, wow, yeah.
And then you thought, that's too stupid to bring up on The Complete Works. But I was like, no, we must.
No, but I feel like I remember, because there's that scene, you know, like that shot when they're leaving the house and he goes in the cabinet and he takes the gun and all that stuff. And I was like, this is the song.
And you were like, hey, Joe, where are you going with that gun in your hand?
Did David Gordon Green listen to that song and then write this movie?
It's possible. You never know.
It's based on the book, according to the credits.
Okay, maybe the guy who wrote the book listened to that song and wrote the book. You never know. So that about wraps things up on our discussion of Joe, the David Gordon Green film starring Nicolas Cage. Mike enjoyed it very much. I also enjoyed it very much. And that's a blessing here on The Complete Works at this point in time.
Let's hope for the next one to be Mandy.
We're just going to skip 4 years of movies and go straight to Mandy.
Yes.
I wish we could do that, Mike, but unfortunately, we cannot. We might. You never know. There could be some gems in there, some hidden gems in the dredges of the direct-to-video stuff. But anyway, where can we find you online this week, Mike?
You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter.
And you can find me at MSmithFilmBlog on Twitter. Thank you for listening to Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriscio. If you're listening on iTunes, or even if you're not, make sure to rate and review us. 5 stars would be great. And tell people you know about the show if you can. If you want to contact us, you can do so by emailing nicolascagecompleteworks@gmail.com. We got a brand new email address. We are excited to receive all of your Nicolas Cage queries.
Yes, new year, new show.
New year, new show. If you have questions that you want them, if you want them read on the air, maybe we'll even do that too if we get enough emails. So
Don't get crazy.
If we get a decent email, we want to read them to the listeners. Maybe we'll do that. We'll see what happens. We would love to hear from you in any case. Join us for the next Complete Works, where Nick Cage gets back on his bullshit with an action thriller simply titled Rage.
Oh my God. I'm so mad. You could even say I'm filled with rage.
Yes, you might even say that despite starring in Rage, he is still just Nicolas Cage.
I hate you so much.
I have been saving that joke for so long, Mike.
Oh my God.
Years have built up to that joke, and I'm going to say it again in the next episode when we actually review Rage.
Oh my God.
Plus, Keith and I have a film bookcast, so we're still not really sure what we're reviewing next week, but we'll figure that out as we get to it, I guess. Right, Mike? Is that the plan?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff. I had nothing at the end of that.
You heard it here. We are reviewing Doctor Who. That's starting from the beginning. It's turning into a Doctor Who cast. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.
Some folks, they live on whatever it takes. Well, I've lived off of nothing for most of my days. It's not worth remembering days of my past that drowned in the sorrows of yesterday's glass. But something will find a way somehow to break. It will be my heart, it will be my face. But I won't recall my many mistakes or hold on